Acharya and his followers. Sutrara arpa bhasya kahe pakasiya tunibhasya kaha sutrara artha achadiya. The meaning of the aphorisms in the Vedanta Sutra contain clear purports in themselves, but other purports you presented simply covered the meaning of the sutras like a cloud. Purport. Please refer to Adi Lila 7th chapter, verses 106 through 146, for an explanation of this verse. Sutra, we can do this one together. This is the final verse for today. Sutra mukhya artana karaha vyakyana. Kalpana te tunitaha kara achadhana. Sutrara mukhya artana karaha vyakyana. Kalpana te tunitaha kara achadhana. Sutrara mukhyana karaha vyakyana. Kalpana te tunitaha kara achadhana. Sutrara mukhyatana karaha vyakyana. Kalpana te tunitaha kara achadhana. Sutrara mukhyatana karaha vyakyana. Kalpana te tunitaha kara achadhana. Sutrara of the sutras. Mukhya, direct. Artha, of meanings. Na, not. Karaha, you do. Vyakyana, explanation. Kalpana arte, because of imaginative meaning. To me, you. Taha, of that. Kara, do. Achadhana, covering. Translation. You do not explain the direct meaning of the Brahma Sutras. Indeed, it appears that your business is to cover their real meaning. Purport. This is typical of all Mayavadis or atheists who interpret the meanings of Vedic literature in their own imaginative way. The real purpose of such foolish people is to impose the impersonalist conclusion on all Vedic literature. The Mayavadi atheists also interpret the Bhagavad Gita. In every verse of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In every verse, Vyasadeva says, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, or the Blessed Lord said. It is clearly stated that the Blessed Lord is the Supreme Person. But Mayavadi atheists still try to prove that the absolute truth is impersonal. In order to present their false imaginary meanings, they must adopt so much word jugglery and grammatical interpretation that they finally become ludicrous. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu remarked that no one should hear the Mayavadi commentary or purports to any Vedic literature. Okay. So this is the continuation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Lord Chaitanya's discussion on Vedanta philosophy. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met for 7 days. And obviously, in a short story about something else that happened, all 7 days and the topics they discussed can't be elaborately enumerated. So we just put it into a package and say 7 days. But imagine one of the most foremost scholars in India at the time, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, They didn't just speak for 15 minutes a day. Let's get together and we'll talk a little philosophy and then go out and do their business. They were talking for hours and hours and hours, and Sarvabhauma was giving classes and explaining so many word meanings and different things in an attempt to help Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understand the philosophy of Vedanta Sutra, because he was concerned that Mahaprabhu was a young man, he had just taken sannyas, and one of the core features, concepts in Vedanta Sutra and in Sankaracharya's commentary on Vedanta Sutra is renunciation. So he wanted to help Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understand the value and importance of renunciation so that he could keep his sannyas vows, being a very beautiful young man. Mayavadi philosophy has its basis in truth. Otherwise, no one would follow it. If you just had some imaginative, like here the word imaginative is used, because there's an influence of that which is not true, but the basis has to be true. Vedanti tat tat tvavidas tat vam yajganam advayam. Brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti sadyate means that there are different features to the absolute truth. One of them is the impersonal Brahman. It's actually a feature of truth. It exists. It exists eternally. And it manifests, or it is, a reality. So, if someone describes reality to another person, and that person accepts, then aren't they entering reality? Aren't they seeing reality? Aren't they witnessing and experiencing reality? So for 7 days he was expounding this viewpoint of Mayavad philosophy based on the concept of the impersonal Brahman as the absolute truth. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just sat silently and listened to him for 7 days. And finally at the end, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, "How is it, even, you know, what's going on with you? I can't understand if you're understanding me or not. If you're not understanding me, generally you would ask. Even if you're understanding, there would be some discussion. So please tell me, why are you speaking silent?" And that's what we're reading here. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "I can understand each sutra clearly, but your explanations are covering this explanation like a cloud. So what is the cloud? What is the not true statement that the Mayavadis present?" They don't. It's not that they present some not true statement. But what they do is they don't take truth to its higher plane, to its higher dimension, to its more full, expanded and blossomed realization. Just like now springtime is here and so many buds are there. A bud is a flower. How can you say that a bud isn't a flower? No, it's a flower. It's just not in its full bloom. So if we were to describe the flower fully in its bud stage, would it be an illusion? No, but it's not the full manifestation of the blossomed flower. Imagine that we have spiritual reality on our right with Goloka Vrindavan and all the activities that go on there. Then outside of that, all the Vaikunthas and all that goes on there. And then the shine, just like the sky, the Brahma Jyoti. And then we have the material world. And in the third canto, Lord Kapila Dev, Lord Brahma, describe how this world was created and the different ingredients and the way that they were created and the way that they manifest, beginning from false ego to mind and intelligence to sound and ether and air and then fire and water and earth. So the world around us that we experience and see is a mixture of all these modes of material nature and ingredients. And in this way, when a soul is born in a body, especially a human body, how does one gather information of what this world is around him or her. What it, you look at a baby. When a baby is born, it doesn't know how to speak. It doesn't know how to express itself. It doesn't know how to eat or sleep or maintain itself, practically speaking. Everything has to be done for the baby. And as the baby grows, how does it gather information by which to understand what its life is about, how to maintain itself, and how to live it? Through the senses, exactly. You can see that they're very mouth-oriented children in the beginning. They're biting everything and tasting it, looking. Sometimes they're just in awe at the world around them. And in this way, gradually, they become domesticated, conditioned by their experience through the senses. And then, of course, as they grow older, their parents, speaking a particular language to them, inherently teach that child how to speak that language and think in terms of that logic that the parent has. So by the time a person is 7 or 8, they're pretty much conditioned, they're packaged, they're domesticated in a particular way of thinking through their senses, through hearing from others. They go to school and everything gets fed to them according to the culture and civilization in which they live. And people dedicate their lives to various things. And most of the world today, according to the Vedic concept, their lives are based on a misconception of what life is meant for. One of the things we often might wonder, why is it so important to understand the difference between Mayavadi philosophy and personalism? When we perform action, when we do something, when we do it, there's a purpose, there's a motive, there's a reason why we perform that activity. And that reason is why we're in the material world. What is the difference between a liberated soul and a conditioned soul? It's the attitude. It's not the activities, necessarily. When we come to the temple, what are we doing in our lives that is different from that of a liberated soul? We do all the things that Srila Prabhupada did. We follow the program that he presented before us. Does that automatically make us a premi bhaktas, that we're in divine love of the Supreme Person? What is the difference? How do we get from point A to point B? How do we go from where we are as not pure devotees to pure devotees? It's the attitude which is gradually changing. The activities themselves are not changing very much over the last 10 years. If you look at your life, what's the big diff between what you were doing 10 years ago and what you're doing now? So that's why it's important. And because it's important, our Vaishnava Acharyas have made a very big deal of this topic. I think in verse 131, Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse. The meaning of the aphorisms in the Vedanta Sutra contain clear purports in themselves, but other purports you presented simply covered the meaning of the sutras like a cloud. Purport, please refer to Adi Lila, 7th chapter, verses 106 to 146 for an explanation of this verse. It's 40 verses, and they're not just little tiny verses with no purports. They're big verses. Well, they're not big verses, they're little verses, but they have big purports. That's the story of Lord Chaitanya explaining to Prakasananda Sarasvati. Prakasananda Sarasvati and his disciples were in Varanasi. And Lord Chaitanya came there, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Dharmasya, he's establishing a practice of self-realization in this world. And he's chanting and dancing in ecstasy. And the Mayavadi philosophy is that one should contemplate and spend more time studying Shastra. And what happens, let's go back a little bit to my explanation before, they are very much absorbed in renunciation because, as we describe, we have earth, water, fire, air, and ether, sound, taste, touch, form, and smell. And if you study Sankhya philosophy, as the elements become more subtle, in other words, from earth to, what's the next one, water, you lose its fragrance. In pure water, there's no fragrance. One of the characters, the qualities of the elements is lost. Then when you go from water to fire, you lose taste. There's no taste in pure fire. Then when you go from fire to air, you lose form. There's no form. You can't see air. And then when you go from air to sound, to ether, you lose touch. You can feel the air when it blows, but you can't really smell it or see it. Of course, if it's mixed, then we can. And then finally you come to ether, which is sound. And if you are trying to get to the spiritual plane, then you have to renounce ether and come to mind, intelligence, and false ego. And then you renounce those and all the qualities that exist in them. And what do you get? Where do you come? Where do you arrive when you renounce this material world? At nothing. At zero. At empty. There's no form. There's no taste. There's no touch. There's no smell. There's none of these qualities. There's no material elements. There's nothing material. There's no modes of material nature. So they're absorbed in not this. Not this. Neti neti. The absolute truth, spiritual, is none of these things. Atasi Krishna Namadi, Nabhavad Graham Indrayi. Spiritual reality cannot be experienced by material senses. Material senses can only interact and perceive material ingredients. So if you renounce everything material, you come to zero. There is nothing because it's all been renounced, and you'll come to the emptiness of consciousness. This is Mayavadi philosophy. So their goal is to renounce the material world, and therefore actually the goal is to become merged with consciousness, to not act, to not endeavor, to not relate. That's Mayavadi philosophy. Vaishnava philosophy, on the other hand, says that if you continue, you've gone from the hard rock material world where everything exists in earth, all the way to nothing, and if you continue along your path, you go through the Brahma Jyoti. You come to the outer regions of Vaikuntha or Shiva Loka, and then Vaikuntha Loka, and then higher and higher. This is Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami. Lord Chaitanya spent time with Rupa Goswami. He spent time with Sanatana Goswami. And they've based their books on his teachings. And as we know, even after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for hundreds of years, these teachings were lost. They were like books on a dustbin. There wasn't even a copy. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur's autobiography, he writes in letters to his son that, I think it was in the 1860s, 1870s, he tried to procure a volume of Chaitanya Charitamrita because he met a nice Vaishnava who had heard through oral tradition about Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's activities. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur went about trying to find a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita so he could read it. How long does anybody remember how long it took him to find a copy? One?
7 years.
Yeah, it took him 6 years. 7 years to find one copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita during that time. So when he finally gathered the different books of the Goswamis and read them all, he himself composed his own books, which further elucidated that. And one of the books is called Mahaprabhu Siksha, The Teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in that book, he enumerates the Dasamula, the 10 basic teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Das means 10, and Mula means root. So just like when you're going to build a building, you have your foundation, you have your blocks, building blocks. The building blocks of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy are these 10 items. One, the statements of Amaya are the chief proof. By these statements, the following 9 topics are taught. Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. Krishna is endowed with all energies. Krishna is the ocean of rasa. The jivas are all separated parts of the Lord. In the bound state, the jivas are under the influence of matter due to their tattvastha nature. In the liberated state, the jivas are freed from the influence of matter due to their tattvastha nature. The jivas in the material world are both different from and identical to the Lord. Pure devotion is the practice of all jivas. And 10, pure love of Krishna is the goal. His explanation. The first topic concerns the nature of proof called pramana. The next 7 topics concern sambandha, which is ascertained in the Vedas. The 9th topic concerns abhideha, or the means to attain the goal. And the 10th concerns the goal, or prayojana. If the topics are divided into 2 groups, a source of knowledge, pramana, and what is proved by the source of knowledge, prameya, the first topic is pramana, and the rest are prameya. So just see how much importance is based. What's the crux? What's the foundational building block of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy? The first one is the proof. All others are proved by that proof, by that evidence. The first one is pramana, shastra. The Vedas are the foundation or building block of Vedanta philosophy, of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, and everything else is supported by their teachings. So I wanted to go through the chapter. It's a little bit technical, but it's important. If the most important part and building block of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, the name of the chapter, by the way, is "The Words of Scripture Are the Final Proof." So what is the meaning of Amnaya Vakya, authorized statements of knowledge? Concerning this, there are the following karikas, or verses. Just like in Srila Prabhupada's purports, what Bhaktivinoda Thakur has done is he's taken verses which systematically explain and prove his point. Srila Prabhupada, you can hear him preach. Pushkar gives wonderful classes like this. Make a statement, back it up with a thought, with a verse. Make a statement, back it up with a verse. Make a statement, and in this way, create with your building blocks of verses a concept supported by shastra. It means that you're seeing something, you're experiencing it, you're witnessing it and presenting it based on the reality. Amaya refers to the scriptures called Brahma Vidya, or knowledge of Brahman, originating from Brahman, the creator of the universe, and passed down through the cyclic succession. Brahma, the creator of the universe and protector of the worlds, the first amongst the devatas, taught Brahma Vidya, the basis of all knowledge, to his eldest son, Atharva. He taught that knowledge by which the indestructible Supreme Person can be known in his true form. From the Supreme Person's breath came the 4 Vedas, the histories, the Puranas, the Upanishads, the verses and sutras, and the Anuvakyas, the commentaries. The word histories refers to the Ramayana and Mahabharata and similar other works. The word Purana refers to the 18 major Puranas of which Srimad Bhagavatam is supreme, and the 18 secondary Puranas, Upapuranas. Upanishad refers to the 11 Upanishads such as Isha, Kena, Katha, and Prashna. Verses refers to a collection of verses in meter, such as Anushtup, composed by rishis. Sutra refers to concise statements which explain the meaning of the Vedas, written by major teachers. Anuvakya refers to commentaries on the sutras written by great teachers. All of these are called Amnaya. The primary meaning of Amnaya is Veda. So all the books, the Puranas, the Upanishads, the histories, the Itihasas, and the commentaries by previous Acharyas are considered Veda, and they have to coincide with one another. If the building block of Vedanta, of philosophy, is the Veda, and somebody speaks contrary to that, then what is their basis for information? Why should we accept? Everybody has an opinion. Everybody has a viewpoint, just as we described earlier. Everybody's been born in a family, brought up in a culture, taught and conditioned by their culture and civilization and parents and everything like that, and everybody has a different experience. So we all have different experiences in the world. How do we come to a common understanding of what's real or what's good or what's bad? There has to be a basis. And the basis, according to Vedanta philosophy, is the words of the information that was passed to Lord Brahma by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His information, his knowledge, is beyond any impurity or any mistakes or any illusions. Knowledge is reality. It expresses and teaches reality. So, although there are other evidences, the evidence given in Vedic version must be taken as foremost. Vedic versions understood directly are first-class evidence. The Vedic statements are self-evident. Whatever is stated there must be accepted. If we interpret according to our own imagination, the authority of the Vedas is immediately lost. The works of the Goswamis, such as the Sandarbhas and Chaitanya Charitamrita of Krishnadas Kaviraj, are included among the Anuvakyas, or commentaries on Vedanta. Therefore, Vedas, Puranas, histories, Upanishad, Vedanta Sutra, and commentaries by Vaishnavacharyas are all considered authoritative knowledge. These sources of authoritative knowledge are glorified in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is presenting to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. One other concept that devotees often wonder about was, why are we instructed not to hear from Mayavadis? Like, why not get a Mayavadi book and kind of study it so you can understand the holes in the philosophy? Why not go to a few Mayavadi lectures and listen to them so that we can understand what's wrong with their philosophy? Sankaracharya was an incarnation of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is the presiding deity of Ahankar, of false ego, which is the most subtle covering over the living entities, so conditioned souls. So by that logic alone, we can understand that if he is the presiding deity of false ego, which creates an illusory view of the world, and we have that element covering us in any way, if he uses his powers of predominance over false ego to teach us a philosophy, then what are our chances, being minute to test the jivas covered by false ego, of defeating him? Not good. Not good at all. So we have to be very careful not to... Now the scientists, why are the scientists impersonalist? Just as we described previously, these material senses and all the knowledge, Bhaktisiddhanta talks about this in his commentaries on Brahma Samhita, all the knowledge in this material world from the beginning of history until today that isn't coming from outside the universe, that isn't transcendental information, has to deal with the elements and the modes of material nature and their immutable manifestations. So all the scientists have, and all the knowledge they can gather and go deeper into deals with these elements and the modes of nature. So when they try to penetrate and understand how the world was created and what is its meaning and how are we built and what is the mechanics of the material world, all they can do is reach an understanding of how the machine works. They can't understand how it's being pushed because they don't have any experience of spiritual energy, of the superior energy. Bhagavad Gita presents us with two different kinds of energies. The material energy, which is inferior, and the superior energy, which maintains and sustains it and makes it act. They can't see that. They don't agree with that. Their information is totally referenced by the material. So they can't possibly enter that which is beyond the universe. So therefore, if they break it all down and become successful in breaking the entire material world down to its essence, what will they come to? Zero. Empty. Energy. Consciousness. Nothing. And therefore, it's impersonal. So, if you teach your children, if you teach your civilization that this material body is you, but it's actually only a conglomerate of energy, chemicals, and that when it's finished, when it dies, it's just going to merge back into the ground, then, and there's no real entity beyond that, then why in the world wouldn't you act so that you could enjoy whatever experiences you could do anything you want, practically speaking. The only thing that's restricting you is the fear of being imprisoned by others who don't agree with your form of enjoyment. Right? Otherwise, why not just enjoy everything and take it to the limit? So, in this way, we'll go on. Krishna speaking to Uddhava, 11th chapter. I first recited the Vedic message to Lord Brahma, telling him about the ultimate path of pure devotion. That message is eternal. At the time of devastation, it disappears, and at the time of creation, I explain it clearly to Lord Brahma. Brahma spoke this knowledge to his son Manu and others. Thereafter, the devatas, rishis, and mankind received this knowledge. The living entities and their lords are all different, receiving natures according to the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance. According to these different natures, various philosophies have been produced by various interpretations of the meaning. O Uddhava, those who have received the actual statements of the Vedas through the Guru Parampara, Anuvakya explanations, from Brahma, have the real truth. All other philosophies have become servants of various offensive teachings. So, if we don't accept the teachings of the Acharyas, if we don't accept the philosophy of the Vedas as they're stated in Shastra, if you can't back up something with Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then it can't be accepted by a community of Vaishnavas. Because it's going to have some influence, some spice of false ego or misinterpretation or illusion. Bhaktivinoda continues. Here it is clearly understood that Brahma Sampradaya has existed from the time of creation. In this Brahma Sampradaya, the pure message of the Vedas has come down through the Guru Parampara and has preserved the real teachings of Bhagavad Dharma. Thus, these teachings are called Amnaya. Means to remember, and nya means that which is learned by passing down. Those who do not accept the Brahma Sampradaya, which is shown to be authoritative by such statements as Brahma, the Lord of the universe, is the first student of Narayan, the Lord of Vaikuntha, are called preachers of irrelevant philosophy. Though a person accepts the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, if he cannot accept this parampara line, is he not most deceptive? The fortunate people consider knowledge handed down in this parampara the best of proofs. This is Lord Chaitanya's first teaching. So when Srila Prabhupada says that human being means beginning with chanting 16 rounds and following four regulative principles, do we accept that or do we not accept that? As a society, not just as individuals. We can see, since the time of Prabhupada 34 years ago, 35 years ago, to today, how the influence of different things comes about. These modes of material nature are so powerful. So, our proposal, we're doing these e-courses online, trying to teach people Srila Prabhupada's books, is hear directly from Srila Prabhupada. Read his books, listen to his lectures, at least 15 or 20 minutes a day. You have 24 hours in which to do various services or enjoy, whatever your program may be. But it's important that we hear from Srila Prabhupada regularly to, number one, understand the philosophy, but number two, to constantly check ourselves, our thinking process, our attitude about what we're doing, so that we can stay on course based on reality, rather than based on somebody else's opinion, our own illusions, the power and force of what society make us think is right or wrong. By hearing, we should develop this habit. It's a practice, just like we chant our rounds. People are so appreciated, and it should be appreciated, that they're chanting, they're into kirtan, but we see a lot of them don't chant their rounds. They don't follow the regulative principles, but they're attracted to kirtan prabhu. Wonderful, beautiful, super. But your advancement, your basis, your building block is something else. And we want to encourage, we want to enliven and inspire. But at the same time, you know, when Srila Prabhupada was here, there was a bottom line. There was a foundation of reality. This must be done in order to make steady spiritual advancement. So these things are part of what happens in the subtle part of our being when we don't have a strong foundation of hearing from Srila Prabhupada, understanding his teachings, understanding reality according to the Vedanta philosophy, and putting, as Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya did, the cloud of our own understanding over the sunshine of his teachings. And we have to be very careful. It's a big responsibility for ourselves and for others. Hare Krishna. I have a nice video clip of Srila Prabhupada. What I did was, I got this little program now as technology advances, and I can go through the different videos of Prabhupada and cut and paste like a short clip rather than watching the whole thing. You can take little parts of it, so I wanted to share it. Oftentimes we wonder, who's a great devotee? What's a great devotee? This explains it very nicely.
Disturb at all, he is called Paramahamsa. Therefore Kunti Devi say, Tatha Paramahamsana. Parama means ultimate. Hamsa means swan. Paramahamsa means the perfect Hamsa. Hamsa, it is said that if you, Hamsa means swan, if you give to swan milk mixed with water, she will take the milk part and leave aside the water. Similarly, a person who knows what is this material world is made of two natures, the inferior nature and the superior nature. The superior nature means spiritual life, and inferior nature is material life. So a person who gives up the material part of this world and takes only the spiritual part, he is called Paramahamsa. A spiritual path means one who knows that whatever is working in this material, just like this body, your body, my body, anyone who knows that this movement, the activities of this body is due to the soul which is within this body. That is the real fact, and this is only outward covering. Similarly, one who knows that Krishna is the center of this all activities, he is Paramahansa. He is Paramahansa. He knows the fact. So, Bhakti Yoga is for the Paramahansa, one who knows that Krishna is the central fact. Aham Adirhi Divana Matta Sarvam Pravartate. So, one who knows that Krishna is the cause of all causes, not only theoretically but practically, convinced he is Paramahansa. So, Kunti Devi said that you are meant for the Paramahansas, not for the rascals and fools. You are meant for the Paramahansa. Tatha Paramahansana Munina. Munina means those are thoughtful. Also mentals, speculators, they are also Muni. Munina Amalatmana Amal. There is no dirty things in their heart. Materialistic person means full of dirty things within the heart. What is the dirty thing? That lust and greediness, that's all. This is the dirty thing. All materialistic persons, they are lusty and greedy. Therefore, their heart is full of dirty things. And avalatmana means those are freed from these two things, lust and greediness. So avalatmana, for them bhakti yoga. This bhakti yoga is meant for the clean heart, not the lusty and greedy. That is not, they may try, they will gradually advance. But once he is situated in bhakti yoga, there is no more lust and greediness. Virakti annatrasya. This is the test. Whether one has become free from lusty desires and greediness, then he is situated in bhakti yoga. He is Paramahansa. So, Kunti Devi. Therefore, one who is not disturbed at all,
So the Mayavadi philosophies, Prakasananda Sarasvati, when they were in Varanasi with Lord Chaitanya, they were thinking he was just a sentimentalist. But when he spoke, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we'll see here, probably going to take a while because we're really inching our way through the story. When Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya hears Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speak on the Atmarama verse, he starts to understand no human being could possibly explain this verse this way. It is not possible for a human being to speak that way. So the knowledge, Bhagavan, he has all knowledge. When Krishna speaks, He has knowledge beyond what anybody can conceive of. So Srila Prabhupada's pointing out in this verse that it's a long, slow process, but gradually we have to become freed from this material world, completely disinterested in everything it offers. But doing that by becoming attracted to Krishna, not simply zero. By transforming our love, straightening it out, and focusing it properly. Any questions or comments? Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.